I'll call us to order. If we could come to order, please. Okay, I don't have a list. I assume nobody wanted to speak. Who's got that list? Okay. Right, and Wayne, I think you had a couple of introductions.
Yeah, I do. We have two new staff members that started with us last week. Catherine Watt is here, and Janice Dove is here. Catherine is the coordinator of compliance, and Janice is a financial analyst. And so they're both replacing vacancies we had on the staff.
Great. Welcome, ladies.
And I will say, and I sent my update, they have both hit the ground running, and we really appreciate it. They've made a big difference already. So, right, Dana?
Yes.
Okay, John, if you'd lead us in invocation.
Lord, thank you for bringing us here safely today. We ask for your traveling mercies on the way home. Please guide us as we deliberate these issues that affect so many students across the state of South Carolina. We also want to say a special prayer for Dr. Brazel and his family at the passing of his mother. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you.
Thank you, God.
And Laban's doing the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And Kathleen is going to read the mission statement.
Our mission is to improve learning and increase learning opportunities in South Carolina through the creation of innovative, high-quality charter schools. Ultimately, we strive to assist South Carolina in achieving academic excellence.
Thank you. And Madam Secretary, if you would take the roll, please.
Betty Bagley.
Here.
We know Mr. Boyd is unable to join us.
Right.
Dan Bull.
Here.
Laban Chapel.
Here.
Ron Epps.
Here.
Don McLaren.
Here.
John Payne.
Here.
And Lindsay Staley.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay, great. The consent agenda, are there anybody have anything they want to pull off of the consent agenda, or do I hear a motion to be accepted?
Move to approve the consent agenda, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. There are no public comments. I don't know of any need for an executive session point. Any other board member? Okay. Then we'll move right into the hearings. And the first one is, and by the way, for the board, there's only going to be one today. Virtus is not going to be here.
They are requesting a withdrawal and submitting at a later date, so I'll discuss that when we can. We have an official written withdrawal statement from them.
Okay. So, yes.
Can I make a statement?
Yeah, yeah.
Just to the benefit of the board and those who will be presenting, if you see me get up and leave or move around, this is not to be disrespectful to the presentation. I am trying to make this meeting cold turkey without the drugs today. And so it's going to be an experiment how long that can last, and I don't want you to think I'm being inattentive or disrespectful by moving around or going out or whatever the need might be.
By way of explanation to anybody who might know, Dr. Epps has had a long-standing drug problem.
His
first day out of rehab, and we're really proud of him. Actually, he's gone through knee replacement surgery.
And I was going to add that I'm proud of him. I've never tried to make it to a board meeting without drugs. You need the
drugs when you've had the surgery.
That's right. That's right. Honor Academy, who is going to be the chief spokesman?
You don't need to put that in the minute.
And your name, please?
My name is Todd Carnes.
Okay, Mr. Carnes, then I assume you've been briefed, but you will have up to 30 minutes to make an initial presentation. And after that time, there'll be a period, whatever the board needs, to ask questions and get clarifications and whatnot. Once that's over, then the board will move into the deliberation stage and we'll deliberate among ourselves and make a decision. If you would, when you start, if you would begin by introducing any members of your planning committee who are with you and kind of just a one sentence about them, you know, who they are, what role they've played, and that kind of thing.
Yes, sir.
And if you're ready, we are. And I will, somewhere around the 15 to 20 minute mark, I will kind of let you know you've got 10 minutes or so to go.
Perfect. From right here?
From any, yeah, there, or if you want to be, walk around, wherever you want to do it, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, my name is Todd Clark. I'll start by introducing myself. I am 15 years now in the town of Lexington. I sit on town council there. I pastor a church there. I currently work for Southern Medical Management. And so that's kind of my story. Would like to introduce my board. I have Peggy here, and Peggy is recently retired. Peggy Makin's from Richland One, and she's a Milken Award winner, had a distinguished career in special education, and lives in Lexington. I have Harvey Livingston, and Harvey is former principal of Saluda High School, just left that position and went to work in their district office, and he is VP of everything, according to with his new job description out of his district office, but enjoying that, just hired his replacement and moved forward. Then we have John Robert Jackson, who also lives in Lexington, former principal of a couple different middle schools in Lexington, now working in the private sector with a curriculum company that does some virtual things. In that realm, then we have Bill Bochette, who is a VP at South State Bank, resides in Lexington, has children in Lexington One schools, and Bill handles the financial parts of everything that we do, very experienced in that. Then we have Sean Norris, who's also a teacher in Richland One, probably about 15 years, right, Sean?
Yes, sir.
Working down there in various schools, coaching different times, currently working in an elementary school in Richland One.
Hyde Park.
And then we have Todd Lott, and Todd is a graduate of Lexington High School, born and raised in Lexington, a graduate of the Citadel. Also obviously serves in our armed forces, and Todd has just finished USC Law School, just took the bar, and so he obviously handled a lot with governance and things of that, and brings a lot to the table as far as single gender education, having gone through this. All right, so that's our charter committee, and I would just start off by thanking you guys for bringing us this far. Give us an opportunity to talk to you guys about this thing that we've been thinking about for a long time and that we'd love to see created in our community. If you look at the charter school, South Carolina State Charter School Act of 1996, you guys have seven distinct purposes in that. We are in line with all those purposes, but I would sit down on number seven, where you say one of the great purposes of bringing charter schools to South Carolina was to create new, innovative, and more flexible ways of educating children within the public school system with the goal of closing achievement gaps between low-performing students and high-performing student groups. A low-performing student group that we have not only in Lexington, we have in South Carolina, and we have across our nation, is young men. There's a gender gap. Everybody's aware of it. It's growing. I don't know that anybody has all the answers. I don't know that anybody knows all the causalities, but there is a distinct gender gap there that is growing. Philip Zimbardo, who's a Stanford psychologist, wrote a book called The Demise of Guys. Several years ago, this was the first thing that kind of caught my attention, and he brought national stats like young men are 30% more likely to flunk out of school than girls. They're 10% less likely to receive degrees than girls. They're two-thirds of all special education students. They're five times more likely to be labeled as having ADHD or ADD. 2011 SAT scores were the worst averages in 40 years for young men, and now our universities are looking at a scenario where 60% of all bachelor's degrees in 2016 are projected to go to young women and 40% to young men. There's just a growing gap there, and we're not here as experts to say We understand why all that's the case, but we do understand we have a low-performing student group, and that translates to the local area. We've done our research, and you have some of the data there in our proposals that shows that these stats hold up. Maybe not to that extent, but it is ever widening. And so through my experience as a pastor, as a football chaplain at our local high school, my wife coached and taught at our local high school, as a town councilman, as a police chaplain, just 15 years immersed in our community, you see this happen anecdotally. You see it at our award ceremonies at Lexington One. You see it in our graduation rates, and you see it in society at large. And so after years of mulling this over and thinking about solutions, we pulled together a team to say, is there anything that we can do? If we don't propose to bring simplistic solutions to very complex problems, this is a very complex problem, but we would like to take a shot in partnership with you guys at finding some solutions. Because the beauty about a charter school is you can be innovative, you have flexibility, and you can drive towards some different outcomes. And primarily, if you think about what's unique about our school, is we want to leverage motivational techniques that work especially well with young men. We don't feel like the question of why our young men are doing worse than our young ladies in school has anything to do with their capacity or their IQ. As I sat on our parent advisory council for our middle school, the thing we're dealing with is the unmotivated learner. And we're trying to find that level of motivation in young men. If you look at historic male institutions like the Citadel, like the Armed Forces, like sports teams, you find that there's some ways you can motivate young men through competition and camaraderie that don't necessarily work in a co-ed environment. If you look at the studies say that single gender education generally outperforms co-ed education. So we would like to build a school that focuses on camaraderie and competition with young men to get them to compete in algebra and literature the same way they compete in soccer and video games, and dial into their motivation. And if we can get their motivation ramped up, then we can drive them towards our two goals, which our two goals are very simplistic. We want academic excellence, and we want honorable character. And young men tend to thrive in an environment of high expectations. And if you put them in that environment of high expectations and put real responsibility on them, then they tend to rise to the occasion. And so we feel like we could start small, that we could learn a lot from people that are already doing single gender education, and we could build something that could drive men towards those two goals. We propose to start in sixth grade and start with 100 young men and build out from there. So now I would invite my board members, everybody will present. Everybody had responsibility for one particular area according to their background and expertise. So each of them will come and talk about a different focus or a different area within on our academy.
Good morning.
Morning.
Honor Academy distinguishes itself by offering an innovative educational program that is rigorous and standards-based. There are three key mission-driven components that will make Honor Academy unique and provide a school-wide comprehensive learning environment for the middle school board. First, a single-gender approach. Second, project-based learning opportunities. And third, a character-focused education. And each of these will be discussed by my colleagues in more detail. Honor Academy will integrate its mission-driven components of single gender, project-based learning opportunities, and career-focused education with the South Carolina State-approved curriculum standards to drive the overall curriculum. Our teachers will have the flexibility to use a variety of instructional approaches to engage our students. In addition, our teachers will utilize research-based methods to engage the single-gender classroom and design lessons to play to the strength of our students. Honor Academy will focus on the core content areas, English, math, science, social studies, with physical education also being an integral part of the educational program. Once again, the curriculum in all classes will be aligned to South Carolina State standards. Our teachers will utilize resources not only provided by the state, other outside resources, and also teacher-derived resources to help facilitate the learning every day. At Honor Academy, our teachers will utilize the backwards by design model when developing their lessons and units of study. Through this instructional model, our teachers will have the end in mind first So when they design their lessons, they can truly create individualized and unique learning opportunities for our students. Once again, Honor Academy will provide a standards-based, unique learning opportunity that will provide our students with the skills needed to continue their journey to be college and career ready. I would now like to ask Sean to come up to discuss our project-based learning at Honor Academy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This week started out interesting for me because I had two nervous things on the docket, this being the one I thought would be the least, and it's not. This weekend I had the talk with my son, and I was thinking it was going to be really difficult, but compared to this, I think I'm going to be all right. I was actually okay with how it came out. So I'll give this my shot. Just realize I am a little bit nervous about this. I wanted to discuss with you a little bit project-based learning. We really got excited when we started talking about different approaches to guides. One of the things I've done at Hyatt Park Elementary, I've been responsible for the after-school program through Dr. Tracy Cooper for years. And I wrote a 21st century grant, and we created a project-based model for after-school. And one of the cool things about that was the guys loved it, because our after-school at Hyatt Park was dominated by guys who qualified. 3 out of every 4 kids who qualified for our programs were young men. They love the fact that they could get in there and mix it up and not just sit in chairs and those type of things. They love the fact that they could get in there and put hands-on. We would build and construct things. We would research and develop it. We would bring it together, test it, and research it and give outcomes. We would bring all those things together, and the guys loved it. In fact, they would tell me, Coach, we'd rather do this in school all day long. And I could understand that, because I was actually more excited about the end of the day than I was during the regular day for most parts. But just one of the things that we really focused and centered things around was collaboration and competition. Tapping into that in a healthy way. Not competing against each other, but with each other for better outcomes. Some of the things that project-based learning really drives home that was beneficial for us is hands-on. We're able to use multidisciplinary components. It gives the students a voice and a choice in how some of the things are played out. Gives them more responsibility. And when I give guys more responsibility at school, where I'm working at, they do. They rise to the occasion. Real world application and implications. The students are able to do self-reflection. We were able to bring in community experts to be partners in that, to show them how this plays out and utilize their expertise. And then we were able to get kids to critique themselves and how things were done, things that just were not common. How would this play out? We would like to use project-based learning as an extension of the core classes and what's going on. I didn't know if you'd have a copy of the project with you. I assume you would. But in the appendix section, we have a model lesson. I think it's on page 28. I'm not going to read it all through to you, but it kind of gives you some samples and examples of how that plays out. But a couple of the key areas I want to point out with that is the projects are multi-staged. They're designed to share leadership. One person doesn't run the show. You have to take a turn following and leading. It's expected we develop that. Healthy competition, heavy collaboration, and continual assessment. There's assessment at each stage in the project that we do. So everything from the innovation part to the actual project at the end. We feel that our young men will get excited about learning in school, and that's really what we want them to be excited about, because when the attitude and motivation is right, then things are going to play out a lot better. And that's what we want, young men who look forward to coming to school and learning. Interesting enough, as we were looking, I was looking at the profile of a South Carolina graduate. We want the same things. We want creative, innovative, critical thinkers, problem solvers, collaborators, effective communicators, skilled with people, work-oriented, perseverant, global-minded, self-directed, and integrity. Those are all things that we push for in project-based learning model. It allows kids opportunity to do that. And so we feel like those are shared goals that work well together. Just thank you for your time.
Good morning.
Good morning.
As you've already heard, that the reason that Honor Academy even exists is to provide that unique and learning environment for boys where competition and camaraderie can be leveraged to lead young men to academic excellence, but also to honorable character, which is hence the name Honor Academy. This committee strongly believes that character education is paramount to one's success vocationally, relationally, and civically. Character education is the intentional effort to develop in young people the core ethical and performance values that are widely affirmed across our society. At Honor Academy, character education will be a whole school transformation process that teaches the 21st century life skills and career skills, such as Sean mentions, honesty, integrity, perseverance, self-direction, and work ethic. And as he pointed out, these 21st century skills are a direct link to the career and life skills identified in the profile of the South Carolina graduate. We will use Sean Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teens as the foundational text to build the pillars of our character-based education. Students will learn through a variety of ways that includes direct lessons, modeling, and integrated activities, and including guest speakers. We will devote almost 1 hour at the beginning of each day to develop the honorable character that we want to see in the young men that we serve. School-wide activities and classroom events and family and community activities will provide opportunities for the character-focused initiatives that we want to see permeate within our school culture. In closing, the balance of academic excellence and the development of honorable character will provide the young men that we serve future opportunities to succeed beyond high school, whether it's college or in a career. Now I'm going to ask Peggy to come up to join us to speak about special ed and RTI.
Honor Academy's academic plan will meet the needs of all students by providing individualized instruction and accommodations and modifications to students who need additional support. One means of support will be serving students with special needs. A full continuum of special education services will be provided to meet the needs of a child with a disability that is enrolled in the school. A highly qualified teacher will be hired to provide the students with the college who qualify under the Individuals with Disability Education Act. These students will be identified when they're enrolled and will have individualized educational plans developed to meet their individual needs. An inclusive model of services will be implemented to address the needs of students with special needs to the maximum extent possible. Support will also be provided for the students who need English language learning services. All students, and again I say all students, will be provided support through the school-wide response to intervention program. This program will serve to identify students who are at risk of academic failure, and it will also ensure that they receive immediate and appropriate interventions. Teachers will use screenings, progress monitoring, data gathered from formative assessments, and tiered instruction to help all students to meet or exceed the standards for academic performance. Excuse me. Honor Academy will comply fully with the guidelines of IDEA, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, the Americans with Disability Act, and Title III of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. We strongly feel that providing these accommodations and additional supports for students will be instrumental in helping the Academy to reach its goals and objectives. That has been said. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please board. I'm Todd Lyle, and I'm here to talk about governance. And Todd Carnes alluded earlier to the two things of academic excellence and honorable character. Well, I'm also here to tell you that our board is set up and our governance is set up in such a way that Honor Academy will itself also have honorable character. And we're going to do that through transparency. Transparency is very important. The bedrock to success for any kind of public institution or group is to allow the community to be involved, allow the community to see the decisions that are made, and allow the community to have input. And the way to do that is to allow them to see the decisions that we make. And so our governance is structured in such a way that proper notice be given to the community, to parents, to stakeholders, to know when we're meeting, to know the decisions that we're making. The governance and the bylaws were filed with the Secretary of State's office. Voluntarily, the bylaws were, to allow anyone to see what it is that we're doing. And so all votes taken will be recorded and made available to anyone who has any interest whatsoever. Furthermore, the bylaws are structured in such a way that directors can only be removed for cause. We've taken a stance that's a little bit against what some general corporate America does to further protect the integrity of this school and this board, as well as the students, as the best interest of the students is the number one thing. The second thing I want to talk about is parental involvement. I think we can all agree that while it's not a requirement for success in students, it's certainly very directly linked to the success of the children when their parents are involved and become partner with us, and we partner with them in helping the student thrive. So we put a heavy emphasis on PTA and PTO groups. The bylaws are written in such a way that we'll protect them and give them any kind of encouragement that we can. We'll also give, again, the notice to the parents, to anyone involved, to any kind of big decisions that the school's making, as well as the small decisions. We're open to be criticized, reviewed, to be flexible as the point of the Charter School Act is. And finally, just to say, because it's obvious, but all the governance is written in such a way that's in compliance with the Charter School Act as well as applicable state and federal laws. Thanks.
Glad to be with you this morning. I get the easy part. I get to talk about finance. It always comes down to the numbers. As you've seen in our plan, we've got a small operating deficit in the first year that's more than covered by $150,000 in donations, $100,000 of which are already in place. We're going to have basically a CPA firm who has experience in the charter school area to help out. We've budgeted for some fiscal management services from them. And then we're going to make sure that sound financial controls are in place to protect the resources of the school and the integrity of the school. Year two, with we project 200 students, we return to a substantial, you know, sort of $180,000 budget surplus in year two. And so really the key is the first year, which is offset by the monies already in hand. So thank you. I'll turn it over to Todd for some summary comments.
Yeah, and I would just note that that originally we thought, everybody tells you gotta have 200 students to make this thing fly from a fiscal perspective, and that seems to be right when you look at the numbers. We thought about that, but for us, what was more important is we're trying to create an environment, trying to set a DNA, because again, we feel like this is a complex problem. We don't have all the answers, but there's some environmental issues, and I'll talk a little bit above my pay grade here in the educational realm, but from my reading and the demise of guys, boys adrift, and things of that nature, that boys aren't compliant learners. You tend to have a lot more compliant learners on the female side. And so it's important for us to start small, to take kids at a natural break out of fifth grade, put them in sixth grade, and create a different environment. If we set the DNA in the environment with 100 sixth graders, and then we move to seventh grade next year, they will in turn set the environment for us for the next group of sixth graders. And then we've kind of set a DNA. And so we're willing to go raise the money to make that happen, because we've got guys on this board who created banks, created churches, created business, pulled things out of the ground. When I was looking for board members, I looked for people who were great leaders and who had created things. So we have entrepreneurial spirit, and everything that we've learned from that is your first year, and the culture that you set is pretty much going to be there. So if you have to sacrifice for that, you sacrifice for that. And we did, and we look forward to it. I would just conclude by our tagline is Inspiring Boys Building Men. As a pastor for many years, when you talk about moral education, character education, one thing I learned that really sunk in with me, they said in the 21st century, we tend to want to teach character and morality in the abstract to students, and they don't understand the abstract.
You could say, you shouldn't lie, you should tell the truth, or you should persevere, you shouldn't quit. Those are abstract concepts. Historically, that's not the way morality is passed down generation to generation. It's passed down through great stories, through fables, through even sometimes myths. There's a reason we talk about Honest Abe and George Washington and Cherry Tree, things of that nature, because young people have to be inspired to greatness. They have to be inspired to character. They don't understand abstract principles, but you do see that when you talk to young men and you lay in front of them examples of somebody who persevered at great personal cost and with great personal sacrifice, that hits a different chord of motivation with them and makes them want to rise to the occasion. And so we intend to use that kind of character education to inspire boys to greatness and to bring that greatness off just the athletic fields or off the social realms and put it back in the classroom. Because when it's only boys, they will compete with each other and we will exalt academic excellence. As I chaplained our football team at Lexington High School for the last two or three years, I had 15 minutes.
You got about 10 minutes.
I got 1 minute left. I'm done. I am a pastor, so I understand. although Harvey will knock me out if I keep going. But as a chaplain, I had the entire football team I have for 15 minutes on Friday afternoon. And so I went in there and I simply told them stories of great men. Great men who persevered, great men who had courage, great men who sacrificed. And as I talked to 80 young men and talked to them in an all-male environment, you could see the lights come on. I could talk to them about responsibility. Our three words were, a man is to protect, he is to provide, and he is to pursue. He's not supposed to be passive, he's supposed to be in pursuit of things. He's supposed to protect those who are weaker. He's never supposed to manipulate them and take advantage of them. And he's supposed to provide. You can never fulfill your purpose as a man if you don't produce anything for society. And so protect, provide, pursue. And as you talk to young men and you show them those characteristics with real flesh on them, you see their kind of shoulders go back and their chin go up, their chest go out, because no matter where they're at in life, they want that. I always say there's a reason that the military calls it a dishonorable discharge, because it's the absolute worst thing we can say about any man. Because when we talk about the concept of honor from 5th grade to 10th grade to 25 to 45, there's something in us all, men and women, but in this context, in the male, there's something that wants to rise to the occasion of honor. We just have to set the bar high enough. And so after doing that for several years, I just began to contemplate, I'm not sure that 15 minutes of inspiration is going to get this done. Put these young men in an environment where that's encapsulated in everything they do, and they're constantly put in a situation where mediocrity is not tolerated, not in algebra, not in timeliness, not in discipline, not in respect, then they will tend to rise to the occasion. Not perfectly, of course, but they will tend to rise to the occasion. At least that's our hope. So I would conclude just by saying that again, we come to this with a wide variety of accomplished board members, but we also understand it's a very, very complex problem, and we don't have all the answers. But we do want to find new, innovative, and flexible ways to wade into this problem that is the gender gap, where we are losing a generation of young men, and we want to go find solutions. And it'll be a dynamic process. We'll need all your support and your partnership along the way, but we would like to not be passive and to run after this. The interesting thing about our board is one of us has a son that will be eligible in 2016. One other helps will have children that could be eligible one day. The rest of us are beyond that. I got $3 all over. It's a community-driven project whereby we invest in this because we believe in it through our experiences of seeing what's happened, and we believe in legacy. And 10 years from now, we like to see Honor Academy graduate 100 young men who, how they live is beyond our scope, but they fully understand what it means to be honorable, and they have the academic resume to get to the next level, which is not happening for a lot of our young men. We really appreciate the time and the opportunity to present to you guys. I'll sit down now, and we'll entertain any questions that you guys might have.
Thank you. Okay, John, we'll start with you.
First of all, thank you for presenting to us, and I appreciate your character, honor-driven scope for your school. I agree, and I think that's important as well. Just a couple of questions. I understand you're going to be 6, 7th, and 8th grade.
Yes, sir.
How many classes per grade are you projecting?
5.
5 per?
Yes, sir.
And how many per class on average?
20.
20? Okay. Just a quick question. I understand you've got them from 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. You're trying to plant seeds and instill honor in these young men. Have you thought about what happens when they leave you from 9th grade on? Or obviously they won't be attending your school, but have you thought about how you may stay in contact with them? Or because 3 years isn't a long time.
Correct. And it's we have contemplated that. As you know, we live in a place that has a great school system. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to overcome their academic achievements, and so there's lots there. But in the middle school years, I always say that there's only one kid who has a really good middle school experience. Everybody else is really insecure and awkward. And so if we could instill some of these things in our students during this time, we feel like they would be set up for greater success in the future. And also, if we were fortunate enough to prove the concept and to find new outcomes for young men, it wouldn't be off the table that we would consider sometime in the future partnering further and looking at a high school.
You mentioned earlier about donations. Is that cash in hand, or is that, the check's in the mail?
The first year is $150,000 that we put in the budget. $100,000 is in the bank account now.
It's in the bank. The reason I'm asking, in a prior life, I was involved with a charter school like you, and I've seen it. And I'm an accountant by trade, and I focus heavily on the finances, and I understand what you're going to be facing. You're also going to face things you don't even know about now. You're going to have curveballs at the time, so your finances are obviously a concern of mine. But we're told that you've got solid financials. You've got a CPA firm that's backing you that has experience in charter schools, so that makes me.
Yeah, you're very right. I've been involved in several startup banks, and there's a very big difference between having a check in your hand.
A lot of people will say, sure, that's interesting. I'll contribute 5, 10, whatever. Okay. And you feel confident about the other 50?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. Policies and procedures. I'm just giving you some advice. Do what you will. From a board perspective, my experience is you're going to have so many things that you're going to be drinking water through a fire hose when if you're approved and that school opens. You're going to have a lot thrown at you. There's going to be things coming left and right. And the most important things are the squeaky wheel gets the grease. The most important things are going to get dealt with immediately. I would highly recommend that you take time to set policies and procedures for your administration and for the board. Otherwise, you're going to be reacting to a lot of things that come your way instead of being proactive. Just free advice. It'll help you, trust me. Regarding governance, I assume that the first board will be your founding board, which is you. When would you project that you would have your first election, and I guess a percentage of you would rotate off or either run for election? When would you have your first election?
Towards the end of the first school year, April of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that it's a set up in a staggered board of the 7 of us, we would comply with the act and have greater than 50% to be elected by the stakeholders, as well as at least 50% or 4 of the 7 to be in the K-12 business background. And then we would go to a staggered board thereafter where it would rotate 2 off and 2 on.
Okay. All right. And lastly, facilities. Understand you've got a site that you've got in mind. I believe DOT and OSF have given their thumbs up on that. Is this a site that you can expand on? Let's assume that you hit the ground running and you knock a homer and you want to expand. Is this a site where you could add on to? Is it sufficient to do that? Are you going to be crunched? Or tell me a little bit about your facilities.
The current status of our site is we have agreed in principle with Saxagotla Church on their site. Their pastor wrote a letter to that effect. We have not signed the lease, but they have 31,000 square foot facility. It's obviously not set up exactly for a school, but it's separate from the main church. It's an entire building to itself. We did have conversations about additions that could be made to that at some point in the future. But what we agreed to was we needed to get through the first 2 years and see where we're at. Because if we put 300 kids in that facility, we will take up the entire facility. And it's not out of the question that we can do that, or we may outgrow it. But we have a solid two-year commitment. And again, I think in our community, if we prove the concept and we begin to win, then you know we may have to think about facility trade, but there are other facilities out there. We feel like it's a great starting point for us.
Okay, and just one other thing I would add, and then I'll stop talking. Going back to your finances, build that reserve fund as quickly as you can, because you never know when, and I don't know what the lease terms are, but if you're responsible for the maintenance,
we have no liability.
You got it. So the leaseholder has to keep up. Because let me tell you, air conditions break, and roofs need to be repaired and replaced, and they're not cheap.
Right.
So I would highly suggest you build a fund balance as quickly as you can.
Yes, sir. We're insulated from that one, at least in the beginning.
Okay.
Okay, Ann.
After years of teaching fifth grade, I can tell you boys change in the spring, and I cannot think of a better time to start sixth grade. And project-based learning for boys is a must. It's not an option. I've just got a couple of questions. On the transportation, what do you do if a child cannot, the parents can't provide a way? I noticed that that you would somehow handle that. I'm sure you're insured for that. But if the parents can't transport, is there?
Actually, it's our understanding that there's no statute that requires us to provide transportation. And so it's really going to be incumbent upon parents to get their kids to us, because we're not set up to provide any transportation.
That's what I thought. I just saw on here that on an individual basis, they would insure to transport any student unable to attend school because of lack of transportation. So.
Yeah, our current, at least in year one, is we'll stay out of the transportation business. At some point, you know, that may come into play, but not in year one.
We may encourage a carpool as well for parents that are having difficulty maybe partnering with somebody that lives in your area to try to do a carpool with parents as well if they are having trouble getting a kid there. We can pair a parent up with another parent. They can get a child there. So that may be an option, at least starting out.
And with Lexington traffic, they may have to ride in a helicopter.
I know, because I know where
Town
you
council.
Are.
Yeah.
I don't be anybody getting through that intersection at 8 o'clock in the morning. The premises, I think from my reading on the IB program, it sounds like everything I've read on IB, this is project-based learning, 7 habits of high effective kids, and the character building. Sounds like it would feed right into a high school transition well, and you might be able to address that better. But is that kind of what you used as a basis?
The IB program is our basis, so if you're asking.
Well, I mean, did you consider that?
Because I don't know if I actually considered IB. We just really looked at the I was at the middle school for a while, and you've been at fifth grade for a while, so seeing these difficulties that the young boys have transitioning out of elementary school to middle school and the need of project-based learning to that, and then with the kind of the character-based to all that, we just wanted to mesh all that together. We really haven't explored the IB program yet, but it is components of that as well, which is what one of the local middle schools in the area is doing an IB program as well. So, but it has very similar components of that.
I just thought that was a good way to transition to the next stage. Thank you.
Kathleen?
Thank you. I was a little bit concerned about the length of service that the charter committee would take on before the election of the first charter board, but that was before I heard you gentlemen and lady speak. This school would be served well if all of y'all stayed on. So my congratulations to you on an excellent application. I do have a couple of, I guess, kind of detail specific questions. I see on the daily schedule that there's only 30 minutes allotted for PBL class, if you wish. Will those 30 minutes be extended over the course of the day through some sort of thematic instruction? Or is that, boom, is that the end of your PBL for the day?
I see it as an integrated part of the core curriculum. So we wanted to establish in our schedule some foundation there to build out, but if math needs that extra 30 minutes added to their schedule, we'd have the flexibility to be able to do that so that, you know, the math teacher can get back that 30 minutes to expand on what they're doing or integrate other activities with the whole curriculum unit. We had to put it in there just so we wanted to emphasize the project-based learning would have specific time built into our daily schedule, but it will also be integrated into the core curriculum as well, so it would be an extension time for those areas.
Thank you. And in regards to your teaching positions, the teachers can be either elementary or middle school certified? Is that?
In sixth grade, they can.
For sixth grade only?
For sixth grade only, yes.
Okay, thank you. Another question I had was regard to, in looking at the budget, the salary for special ed position. You're tripling your student population over 3 years, yet you're not adding or even going to a full an FTE for special ed. It's on the five-year budget. You don't anticipate then adding, you know, like I say, tripling the size of your school, that would be necessary?
I think that there were some add-ons on the consultant side there for special needs, but then there's also, we intend, there's enough budget funds and surplus in year two and three. If we had to add those things, we could. Again, we're looking at about $180,000 surplus in year two.
Have y'all identified your school leader yet?
No, ma'am. We have not. We wanted to wait and see if we were able to secure the charter. And if we do, Harvey, who just hired his replacement at Saluda High School, will lead the process and we will begin interviewing right away.
Okay. Again, a note of thanks. You taught me something. When I was reading the application, I looked at the name of the author of the Seven Habits of Highly Effective Teens. I read Sean. I thought, oh, man, what a typo. Not so. Sean is Stephen's son, which I did not know. I think that's all for now. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Ron?
Yes. I'm very impressed with some of the things that have been pulled together by your team and the way it's articulated to address the issue of the gender gap, the achievement gap related to gender. There, in the initial reading, I saw a reference to STEM. And going back, I couldn't find it. Where does STEM come into play? And your programmatic emphasis.
I can see the STEM focus also tying right into our project-based learning with the example that Sean provided with our roller coaster activities in our ministry. The STEM ties right into those project-based learning activities, that science, technology, engineering, math components. And so we see that as an integrated part within the project-based learning aspect of what we're doing with our students. So extended beyond the walls of the classroom, outside, and bringing some of those concepts inside, whether it's building roller coasters, tying in the science, technology, the engineering, and the math behind all of that within those activities.
If it is one of your strategies, STEM is very intentional and very deliberate. I didn't see that intentionality developed in your plan. And so I couldn't tell whether it was a major focus or something you were going to kind of beat around the edges on or what. There is significant cost related to a STEM emphasis. I didn't see that reflected in the budget.
I would say even maybe that could still be an open-ended question. I know that the emphasis in those areas is definitely something that we would at least at a minimum beat around the edges because young men have strengths in those areas. I think sixth grade science is one area where young men outperform young ladies in our district, one of only two. And so we would definitely beat around the edges of that. Is it going to be a core emphasis? Obviously, the development of our curriculum is a dynamic process. And so I would say there's a little bit of an open end on that that we would want to continually pursue, especially once our administrator's in place, and find out how central it would be. But at least a focus on those subjects would be centralized. And just a limited scope in curriculum, we can't provide nearly the scope of what's normative in middle school. We're pretty comfortable with that because we feel like you can only be good at a few things. If we can get these boys to excel in things where they have some natural proclivities, it'll pay off for them later.
Okay. The other area where I had hoped I would see a little more specificity related to the issue of single gender had to do with the social science areas, which did not seem to be. I know that the Seven Habits is the foundation, but I didn't see the social science. Usually in a single gender focus, there's a heavy emphasis on how there are issues related to the social sciences that allow you to get at those single gender issues. I don't see from the standpoint of either the history or I know there's a lot about character education, that it would seem as though a very thorough development of the social sciences would be appropriate, almost necessary. For instance, if I had been able to find the history approach, I would have looked at whether you were going to use ethnocentric or Eurocentric or what kind of specific approach related to the fact that you're single gender. Does it make sense? Do you understand the question and all that verbiage?
Maybe not fully. I understand the ethnocentric or Eurocentric app in that scenario, and maybe it was just we didn't get it down to that level of specificity. I'm not sure that we articulated it to that point. We were kind of unsure of how far you need to drive that down. There's this tension that you live in as a board when you're trying to create your application, but you don't want to, you want your administrator involved in part of this, and you want to give them real ownership. So we only took these things as far as we felt was necessary to prove the concept, because we want to leave some room for our administrator to drive further, and we want to follow models of current single-gender institutions that are doing well. We've spent time with Langston Academy in Greenville, which is part of their local school district, but they're one of the top five Nova schools in our state, and they were very cordial to us. We visited, and they developed a lot of materials. I think they've been in existence for 10 years, and so we do have some things to learn in the single-gender curriculum environment, and we plan to do teacher education in those realms. So I don't know if we missed it or if we just didn't get there.
No, I I'm not sure either, and I'm not offering this as a criticism, because I really think you're looking, I think you're getting at it through the character education, the character development piece. I mean, I kind of assume that, and the fact that it's project-based, and that in itself gives you ample opportunity to get into those areas. I just wondered whether I missed it or you missed it or what. But what I was really getting at, to be frank, was to try to identify where the board is related to the issue of diversity. Lexington is a community that's has a growing African-American population, and especially with this being a male-specific program, I think I was trying to find, okay, where is the, how is this issue of diversity going to play itself out, not only programmatically, but in staffing and all aspects and the composition of the board?
Yes, sir.
Have you had African-American men involved?
Yes, sir.
In the I saw the two pastors.
Yes, sir. And along those lines, our strategy, again, is some of these things get held up, but I've met with pastors in our community, with my various relationships. I have multiple relationships with people in our community of diverse backgrounds. The chief of police, Terrence Green, was going to sit on our board, had agreed to. He's disqualified because of his position as chief of police. He can't sit on another agency. But I have his full support. And so I have the support of many African-American pastors with whom I've talked, with our chief, and with others. We're going to strive for a diverse population. You know, our whole model is set up on single gender. That we can't bend on that one. But in the area of diversity, we want to strive for that. As a matter of fact, you know, just me being a pastor, when I began to talk about this, dream about it, push it out to people, everybody said, why don't you do this as a private school and just have total autonomy? And I had no appetite for that, because I'm just going to price out people that are economically disadvantaged. And that's a fine thing to do, but I'm not going to put my blood, sweat, and tears in it as a volunteer and exclude people like that. And so that's how we wound up pursuing the idea of a charter school, because it has to be open to kids who can't otherwise afford it. If I'm really going to believe for it. And so that's where we stand. Obviously, Lexington is not the most diverse community, so we'll have to work hard to bring diversity to it. But we plan to stretch all the way into West Columbia and to leverage relationships with Brooklyn Baptist. They have a kindergarten working there. And so we're going to stretch and do all that we can. You'll even see it in the marketing pieces we put out. And everything we've put out thus far, we've been very intentional to show them that we're going to be diverse.
That response answers all the questions I have related to that area. So, thank you.
Linda?
Yeah. Thank you. I love the idea of single gender. Went to all women's college. Believe in it. Had begged my children to send their kids to single gender. Let me ask on the administrator that you're going to hire, the school leader. Have you developed a job description, profile? Can you talk about what you're looking for? What
we
you
have,
want to find? Okay.
We have and kind of hopefully once we see our charter, we're going to sit down with the personnel department here at the Charter School Association, just so I can kind of gain some more insight. But yeah, really want to go out, first of all, and I know it's going to sound very, sound cliche-ish, but find the right person for the job, somebody that is, first of all, very knowledgeable and is a sound educator, somebody that's passionate about what our board and our community is hungry for, somebody that's going to put in the extra time, somebody that's going to be committed. Fit is going to be very important. We've kind of talked about it as I've hired over the past several years, kind of a two-step, and I'll get to the interview process and answer some questions. The first round of interview is the standard interview. We want to make sure our candidates or our couple finalists are academically sound, leadership sound, that can educationally run our school. Once we've narrowed down some individuals, then the second round is when we come in to determine the fit. And that's when we find that individual that we know is educationally sound, but has that passion and drive and that vision that we share to go to the next level. We really, as Todd said, we haven't gone out and done any feelers or any, you know, public seeking of candidates. Hopefully once we receive our charter, we'll begin to advertise. Both, you know, through SCASA, state paper, private school board, whatever, the alliance board, go out. And then once we find a quality pool of candidates, going and get them in, knowing that there's a great chance that quality candidates we get will be under contract. Obviously, we want to have good relationships with all districts, so we will nurse that relationship. So just so it doesn't appear that we're poaching a candidate. But once we find that key person in place, obviously we know that person will be under contract. That person will still have some duties at their present school. And then kind of have that person obviously working with us with some after hours work. So then once we can fully put an individual under contract. And I guess that's a great thing too, but making our board, we have several educators on the board. We have several current and past administrators. So we're hoping that we can be sounding boards for the new administrator that's coming in.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I answered your question or not.
You've got a plan.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
You've got a plan?
Yes, ma'am.
And, but you've not really targeted anybody at this point, that's what I understand.
Yeah, we probably all have some people we want to go ask. First thing we want to do is find people we want to go ask. Yeah. But it's a high-risk, high-reward type scenario, and so we've got to have somebody that's got a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit and is willing to embrace that. And that's really the guy we want anyway.
Okay.
We need somebody that can embrace high risk, high reward.
Yeah, and I would only say a lot of entrepreneurial spirit.
We have learned.
Because I think John's drinking out of a fire hose.
Pretty close.
In a startup, a startup, especially as ambitious. And I had been doing a little bit of research on my own about eighth graders and had found the writing between a university in Berlin and Cornell about eighth grade being the highest indicator of success in college, how they finish. Are you guys, anybody? No? Okay.
I can tell you the writing scores are not very good. The eighth grader in middle school, we're lacking. I mean, the boys specifically in our school are well below.
I right out of college, I taught boys in boarding school, and it was hard. They don't want to write. They just want to talk. Okay, I think the hiring of that and my other questions, I believe, have already been asked. And, so.
Betty?
I want to piggyback off of Kathleen's point about the 30 minutes for project-based learning. When you're marketing your school, people see that, and they may not really realize what your answer is, because project-based learning is an integration. It looks like a silo, and that could be problematic. And I too noticed them. It was there and gone. It was there and no more. But I mean, that's another whole body of literature, just like gender information is. So when you use words like that, you've got to be very, very careful, because the expectations will be for a program to be there. Lexington One has a K through 12 language program. If you do not have language in your school, that would be taking the students out of the language program. So it might be something you might need to think about, because they, having world language from K to 12 is huge, and that's not everywhere. But to come your middle school years losing that world language opportunity could be an issue. The budget, I'm not sure you have enough money for professional development. I think it was $1,500 to $3,500, something like that. Because just going off into Covey is expensive. And it just depends on how deep you go with Covey. But they like their materials. And they do not like their name or their materials thrown around without the proper professional development with it. I just want to caution with that.
One thought there was, we intend to apply for the grant, and do so that could help bridge some of the shortfalls we might have. We can't use those for salaries or for facilities, but we thought that could be a good additive if we need that for right. Like you said, it is about 13.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because their professional development goes, I mean, to the secretary, to the custodians, to the parents. That parent component is really huge. So when people see, you know, things such as Covey, that means a whole different program other than just using the characteristics of it. Now, this is probably more of a comment. The research is crystal clear about gender education and the instructional strategies. And I mean, the body of literature is a wealth of it. So it makes you want to say, well, why come there's not more of it? And actually, I've had some experience in my district with gender education. And there is nothing wrong with it. It works. But sustaining it is the issue. And I think you put out about 4,200 letters of intent or interest. In, you got that 52, something like that, if I'm not correct. Here is something that is very good. The literature is very clear on. People see the outcome, but they will not stick with it. And the reason they don't is that the kids put pressure on the parents, because they want to go back to co-ed education. So as educators, we know the value and what it can do. We've had it, we've lost it, because we could not sustain it. And that is to get parents to continue with it. Even though they saw the positive outcomes, it is that pressure the kids to go back. And I really caution you about that, because I'm not so sure gender education alone will be the draw, even though I know exactly what you're saying. But how well you do the project-based learning, the leadership component, how well you bring the community in with field trips, and how sound those instructional opportunities are, may have more of a draw than the general, simply because middle school is difficult. And kids have their ideas about what they want, and sometimes parents will cave in and will do whatever they want to do, even though in the long run. So I just worry about the sustainability, because when you see it in a school setting, you have choice in a school setting. So they can either be in the gender or they can be in a regular. But then again, you start to see the gender fall away, and that's because you can't make up enough for the class. So that's real. That's a very real problem that I would want you to really be aware of it as you go into it, because it could sabotage you and have absolutely nothing to do with the strength of your program or the literature or research behind it. And just one other quick one. What are the 8 schools in the state? I know you mentioned one in Greenville.
8 schools?
I read where there were 8 schools in the state who had gender education.
I couldn't list those off.
Okay.
I'm aware of Langston Academy, which is a charter school.
Right.
I'm aware that you guys have a single gender school down in Orangeburg that mm-hmm. launched last year. But I'm not aware of it.
I'm just curious about the 8 because I wasn't aware of the 8.
I think that probably references that some public schools in some districts have single gender
school
education.
Within a school.
Yeah, embedded.
Okay. There's one down the street.
Layden.
Thank you all. John, thanks for letting me go last. All my questions are answered. I thought I was going to be first on the road. So most of my stuff's answered. I've got the CPA background like John, so I look at a lot of business stuff and everything, and again, that's I don't have any issues after the discussion. Let's talk about the nature of boys at that age. Let's talk about sports. Let's talk about discipline. You've got different ways you've got to go about that. I know you've got use of the gymnasium. You know, let's say we're 3 years in, we're full school. What are these kids going to be able to compete in? Where are the fields? We're going to have full sports teams and good leagues and that type of thing going on. What's been done from that standpoint?
Some of that's undefined, but we've taken the ball this far. We know that you can't compete in sixth grade, so it gives us a year to get rolling. And Lexington is a highly competitive athletic community. Plenty of recreational opportunities there. But what we envision in the short term is doing sports that don't require lots of equipment, lots of facilities.
Okay.
So we're going to focus on wrestling and cross country. They also kind of fit in with our values because you don't have to be the greatest athlete to compete in those. You just got to work hard. It takes a lot of perseverance. We can throw down some mats and we can run. And we want to ease into the sports realm and get into places where we can compete. So we'll start with those two. Outside of that, we plan to use the Tebow rule and integrate our kids who want to play football. We should have a lot of kids who want to play football, want to play other sports. We have significant relationships with the coaches of our community. We've already begun that conversation to say, one of these days we'll be sending you our kids. We need your help to integrate them. And hopefully they'll go in clusters and groups and go compete in those realms. But we, you know, facilities would be our main hurdle going forward.
Right.
We will ease into the athletic realm, but we would like to be known as being great in a few realms.
Right.
As opposed to getting trounced in a lot of realms.
Okay. Discipline. I can only imagine. I don't have the experience with single gender, but talk to me about how you can, you have just all these boys, what's different about the way you can plan on incorporating discipline, the creative side of it, as opposed to pink slips, demerits, suspensions. I mean, have been thoughts on how to be proactive on before a kid kind of gets gone a little bit, how you can interact with that child early on to be more positive with discipline type structure?
With my background, I'll take that question.
Okay.
I'm a former principal of the alternative school in Lexington, so I dealt with a lot of at-risk boys anyway, and a lot of it was discipline. But a lot of it tied directly back to that they were unmotivated in classroom. So I think we can combat the discipline with not pink slips, but just trying to find ways to motivate them in the classroom using the innovative, creative ways of project-based learning to grasp them and hold them over attention in that classroom. But to really address their question, look for the positives and reinforce the positive. When you see the student doing something right, acknowledge that. Don't just turn an eye to that, but acknowledge that and build up that. That is an honorable characteristic that we want, and recognize that. And that public recognition will then begin to grow with the other. So those are some creative ways, rather than just demerits or peep stripes or referrals that we've talked about in our meetings and things that we want to see included through our GIS model of intervention as well.
I think the other thing is that's why we start with 100, because you got to set a culture and culture expectations. And we wrestle through the first 100, then our 7th graders will teach our 6th graders, like, that's not what we do around here. At least there won't be a celebration. You guys know how it is. Society, there's a celebration of disrespect. You can get celebrated for disrespecting adults. And I've had kids in public school and private school. And so we got to work hard where that's not celebrated, but it's a little shameful by their peers. And I'm not saying we can, but if you win in year one, then you win every year after that.
That kind of led into a question of mentoring. You mentioned it. Do you have an idea or a plan of utilizing this first year class as they go to 7th, 8th? Having a mentoring program where when the new 6th graders come in, they can have a big brother type setup or something like that? Is that
Sean's done some of that after school.
Yeah, for example, in my class, I use what we call the guru. Guru, whenever we change subjects or whatever, this is someone in the class who's done really well. And it's kind of like this. I'm a PE teacher and an after-school coordinator. So the guru is distinct in a particular area, and his job is to help me. And part of that is to transition responsibility just from me always telling you what to do, for you now owning the information and sharing it. So it feeds into the fact that we want people to be responsible for themselves and people that come behind them. This is something I'm proud to be a part of. You're a part of a legacy. You know, using that project base where you're accountable to a team, and when you lead a team well, fill that up. When you lead it poorly, we intervene there. And that's how we come in and say, it's not that you did it poorly, but this is how you need to go about it. Teaching kids how to think about the problem-solving process, how to go through that to make a decision. And that we're not accountable. The key is that they're accountable to everybody. Not just me as the teacher, if I'm the teacher, but they're accountable to the teammates, they're accountable to the teachers, they're accountable to the people coming behind them. And that's part of the DNA, the culture that we want to set up, similar to what happens at the Citadel and those type of things in those areas, as far as that kind of accountability really curbs a lot of that behavior.
I think we can just do like push-ups like the Citadel.
No, that's cool. There are always push-ups. Activity is a way of enforcing and helping and developing.
Just one more aspect is community involvement and talk about the entrepreneurial side of things. How are you going to get these boys out in the community to, let's say, represent the school? And then have you had any discussions with the corporate side of Lexington? I mean, there's a lot of big business in Lexington, a lot of good self-employed small business as well. Bringing those men, particularly, into the school to show these kids what hard work can do and how it can pay off. So have you had any partnerships, particularly with, say, Michelin or Prison or any of those kind of guys?
We haven't formulated those because they want to wait and see if we secure our charter.
Okay.
Felt like it was premature. But on the flip side, Todd's involved in Rotary. I sit on the board at the Chamber. I spoke to the Chamber last Tuesday. I'll be speaking to them about this project in the near future. And so we have lots of tentacles in the business community, and the model is first we got to bring the community to us and put them in our school. We'll be using them in that first hour of character education, because people who are successful, they have some appetite to pass it on. Somebody just has to make space for them. And so going back to how do you teach character education morality is by example. And so they get in here from some guys who have excelled in life because they excelled in the classroom. And so we'll have somewhat of an open door policy for people that are known to us, so they get access to our school. So hopefully we can show them that in this environment we have a different degree of discipline, and that'll be part of the buy-in. And again, if we can prove the concept to our community, they'll embrace us, because everybody I've talked to across the board, again, everybody
I don't get any pushback. Everybody thinks it's a great idea. There is a big difference in thinking it's a great idea and convincing your sixth grader to go. And we understand that. We've got to leverage hard year one. But after year one, you know, then it kind of proves in the book.
Betty?
It's something that you said in your presentation and what you brought up with the profile of South Carolina graduate, that for so long we just thought about just telling you to be good, telling you to be on time, telling you to be respectful. It's got to be taught and prove what you are trying to do with project-based learning, with the other research, with the character education. And what the profile of South Carolina graduate is trying to do is that through the instructional strategies, you're teaching character. You're teaching those soft skills, the integrity, the perseverance. And, you know, we should know that. But you've got to intentionally teach it. And it's got to be daily, 8 hours a day, not just told for a few minutes to be doing. And so you're really on to something that I think many people still need to catch on to.
Yeah, it's one thing to, as I saw as a chaplain, it's one thing to inspire young men to greatness in a very limited scope. But the peer pressures, the environments they're in, it keeps them from execution. But they almost need a completely different oxygen that they breathe about 8 hours a day to get there, because let's face it, it's countercultural. It's countercultural to be respectful to adults. It's really countercultural in our environment for a young man to be excellent in the academic realm and brag about it. He generally hides it. We have to shift that culture.
Okay. Just a couple of things. Thank y'all for all the work you put into this. It's a very good application. In trying to integrate these concepts of character, how does the recruitment process of not only the school leader but the teachers, all the teachers, how is that affected by your desire to teach these character things? How does that affect how you recruit teachers?
Historically, when I do hiring in my current position in the medical field and other realms, we talk about the three C's, character, competency, and chemistry. And a lot of people will meet the first two, and there's not chemistry. So we'll run along that same paradigm. We'll have to make sure that we share the same character values. We want to teach the historic virtues of honor and chivalry and dignity and perseverance. A lot of those that are outlined in 21st Century Learn, chemistry will be a big deal. And I think as people mingle with us, and of course year one, we only got to hire six teachers, and it's almost like the students. We hire the first six correctly, or at least five out of six. Nobody does that perfectly. And they'll provide us the next six. And they will need to line up with our ideals about character. And again, you're not going to come to this scenario unless you have a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit. And our first group of teachers and administrator, they're going to sweat a lot year one, because they're going to create a lot of things that will be difficult. But hopefully they can vision out a school of 300 young men that hopefully carry themselves a little differently.
And will your evaluation of your teaching staff, will part of that be how well they model being people of character?
Absolutely. You can't teach perseverance if you don't have it. You can't teach work ethic if you don't have it. And so it would absolutely be part of it. And our administrators would be much more adept at talking about adept an evaluation, but it does have to become a part of our evaluation process because we don't want, I always tell people, I don't want you teaching things you don't believe because right. Everybody knows it's fake.
Yeah. I've got two granddaughters who went through single gender. One's going to be a senior this year in a single gender school. She's been in the whole 12 years. And one of the things I've noticed in visiting there is that, and I think it's just like with your own kids, but it's I think kids pick up those kind of things more through modeling than they do through being told. And if you tell them and don't model it, it just doesn't work. But the place I did, that I'm familiar with, they just do a great job with those young ladies. But I've thought a lot about, wow, where do they find these teachers who really, you can tell, are dedicated to it? And my granddaughter told me just a couple of weeks ago, we were just talking, and she said, you know, if one of my teachers kept me after class and told me that I was not reflecting well on the school, and that she as a teacher didn't like that, I think she used the word resented that, and she said, then that would break my heart. And I said, well, do the teachers do that? She said, oh yeah. They call the students in and say, hey, you stay at school. Hey, you know, I've been observing you, and you're just not reflecting well on what I'm trying to do. And that's hard to do as a teacher, I would think. And I would think it'd be harder to find people who do that. But now you've thought about that.
Yeah, we absolutely have. We talk about these concepts are common, not
taught. Right.
And so we do have to have the right people. So if you find out where that school finds their teachers, you wish I had that hope. The other thing I think is you know, us being on the male side of that is I think we'll have the ability to attract some men who have some real passion
right.
Raising up the next generation.
Okay, the only other real thing I had was in the area of governance, I found your in your application, I found the discussion of governance, frankly, to be weak. It was strengthened somewhat on page 42. You do have a little that's not in the governance area, but you do have a little bit of a discussion of the role of the head of the school, which was very good. But can one of you tell me, what do you see, how would you characterize, how you envision the relationship between the board and the head of school?
That'd be a tough thing.
Yeah, and just to clarify, when you say governance, this question is governance, but particularly the other stuff you said, say, page 42, that'd be more in the operations section?
You kind of had it in there, but actually I thought that your discussion of the head of school, some of their, actually it was a little bit about the head of the school versus, and how they relate to the board in that section. I thought it would have been better in governance, but that's
sure.
Picky, but I want to make sure how you envision it says the Honor Academy Board of Directors will delegate to the principal the authority for the management and execution of day-to-day. That's really has a lot to do with governance. But could you flesh that out for me, son, what you see the role of the board vis-a-vis the head of school?
Right. Okay. So the board, you know, based on South Carolina corporate law as well as common law, we each have a duty of loyalty, duty of good faith to first and foremost to the public entity or the school in this case. So that means that each of us are pledging to not self-deal, not to usurp the corporation, that we will act as an ordinary and reasonable, prudent investor, if you will, would in, on the corporate side. But we're not agents of the corporation. We are actually the analogy would be we're like the owners, therefore we want it to thrive and excel the best as it can. So we delegate to the officers as agents to act on behalf of the company. And in doing so, we retain the power to contract and hire whoever that those officers will be. But at the same point in time, it's their job to manage the day-to-day operation. So a good course of business is you specify the limits of the agency relationship. You continuously monitor that scope and those limits that you provided. So our relationship is going to be to do a very nice detailed job description. And then once we hire them and contract with them on behalf of the corporation or the school, then our job is to continuously and properly monitor their performance and make adjustments to the scope of their agency as well. So that's kind of twofold, but number one, that requires that we do a good job defining their job at the beginning, as well as do a good job at monitoring their performance. So they'll answer to, as an officer, the administrator will answer to us, but hopefully, you know, good fences make good neighbors kind of analogy, we will do a good job at defining the area to which they can play in. As long as they stay in that area, they're fully free to utilize whatever efforts they can to the best abilities.
Okay, and so let's say that a board member feels that maybe some of the management techniques of the head of school are not what they ought to be. Hank, would you envision that board member going and talking to the head of school about that?
Well, that would be something that we as a board would discuss with the. We would not want one board member to unilaterally go redefine the scope of the agency. We would not want to do that. We as a board would collectively want to do that. And if it were an urgent matter that would require, in our bylaws, it would require notice of a proceeding, and I believe we'd have at least a 3-day notice to where all seven of us would meet. We'd need a quorum present to make any kind of what we call a fundamental change to the corporation.
Yeah, and you've given a great, you just finished law school, right? You've given a great legal answer to that, but within that, what's legal, there are a lot of different approaches to how you get there.
Right.
And so what I would encourage you to do is pick one, find one, pick it, and make sure that you've got an approach. Because under the legal, you could have 10 different approaches, and so I would encourage you to pick an approach and narrow that down so everybody's thinking the same way, not only about the what's of this thing, but the how the board goes about doing that. I think that could be important for you. There's a church and state questionnaire, right? You remember that? And it's in the appendix. And without my going to it, I could find it and read. But there was a curious, there was a question that asked something to the effect, and Dana, maybe you can help me here, but about is any member of the committee here a member of the church? Right. Do you happen to have?
I do. And the answer to that, as I recorded it, was no.
I think it said more.
Okay.
But I found curious at least I made a note to myself. Do you remember the answer to that?
I did.
I think it said.
I don't remember what was addition. I mean, the answer is no.
Okay, but there was something about that we're not members of the church or any other religious organization. And you were a pastor. I just found that strange.
No.
I just wondered.
I don't know. You'd have to pull that up, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. I see that, right. It is. The question is specifically what proportion of the school's planning committee, governing board, or also officers, board members, or employees of the church or other religious organizations. So I think the no was in response to the specific
church. Okay. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
But
okay.
Not getting at the fact that you are a pastor of another.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I found the question interesting.
Actually, and I could see that the answer could be yes to one part
and no to another part. My concern was more about the question than about the answer, but I was trying to figure out how it all happened. Okay. Anybody else?
Just real quick, I was going to ask is the independence of making sure the public understands that you're going to be on church grounds. Potentially at least in a building, Saks Gotha. you're not a part of it. You're not a private school. So has there been any thought about just making sure that when people driving by are going to see the sign right there, however it may be put up? Fortunately, it's a separate building, which I think is an advantage, but still it's on the campus. Has there any thought about making sure that people understand that the Honor Academy is not a part of it?
Yeah, we have a lot of education to do.
Yeah.
And obviously, actually, Matt, Mike, and Splash, they're going to help us market this. But you can talk to administrators in Lexington, one, even some of the principals of our high school, which I have. And they don't understand charter schools. They're not really versed in the concept of meaning. And so when our administrators don't understand it, our rank and file really don't get it. And so we'll have to hustle through education. But I think the tuition-free side of it, you try to affirm, you know, that we are a public school. And I have some venues where I can talk about that publicly, but we're in an uphill battle.
Okay. Yeah.
And Betty alluded to this earlier about looking for a leader that's got an entrepreneurial spirit. I'm not an educator by profession. But what limited interface that I've had with them, I don't think you're going to find a lot of principals or head of school or whatever you're going to title this person that have the great academic achievements and also a business side. You may, which would be great, but I don't know how easy that is. One thing you may want to consider is to have someone on your staff, and I don't know if you budgeted for this or not, is to, like, a business development person who also could do marketing. And in Lexington, you, as Laban alluded to earlier, you've got lots of industry there who could be your liaison with these entities to try to get grants and foundation support. PTOs are great, but community outreach is going to be critical. You're going to build your brand over a certain number of years. But a business development person, call them a grant writer, if you will really supplement your budget, because you are going to be a small business. Using the state average times, if you top out at 300, you're looking at, you know, $1.6 million in funding when you expand. You know, that is a small business. If you could supplement it here and there, I'd highly suggest that you do it.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks. And we're now start our board deliberations. And so the first thing we need, of course, is a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the Honor Academy charter application.
Second, Mr. Chairman.
Moved and seconded that the application be approved. Discussion.
Something I wanted to say during the question that I withheld because I knew Eric would jump over and present it in the moment. I'm glad to see that the board was smart enough to include a female among those men. Anything that's any policy group that's all male is doomed to fail.
So.
Other discussion?
Is there the staff recommendation about the enrollment priority? Is that something
you're going to discuss? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't do that. Yeah. You want to elaborate?
I will say we feel overall this is one of the strongest applications we've had this year. It does have innovation. It does have an academic profile that I think is a bit unique. And the interview process we thought was also very strong. Anecdotally, just quickly, when I first met with Todd, to show you how the mindset is sometimes, I said, I just heard he wanted the concept of a single gender boys school, middle school in Lexington. And I said, I'm not sure there is a need for an at-risk middle school in Lexington, just off the top of my head. And then he went through the whole thing. This is not for at-risk boys. This is for boys in general, and we can fit the needs of a wide spectrum of academic abilities. And I said, oh, wow. You know, the mindset would go right to they're going to need academic help. But I think the concept with the honor portion of this makes it a unique school, so the staff recommends the charter be approved.
But there was one.
There was a tweak.
There was.
I'm trying to remember.
There were, I think the enrollment priorities had, if I remember correctly, Dana.
Yes, two groups of students that are not recognized or not afforded priority, which we were seeing and keep seeing in applications this round. And then also the appeal process for admission denials was not consistent with state charter school law. If I may, mm-hmm. During the interview, the committee did articulate an understanding of the valid enrollment priority categories as well as the admission denial appeal process, and they also demonstrated an understanding of, they acknowledged the errors. So, and subsequent to that, they did submit corrective procedures. So if I can just articulate our finding. Is that okay?
Yes, please.
Based on a full review of the written application and interview of the application review team consisting of 5 staff members and an external evaluator found the charter proposal to Honor Academy of Lexington to be comprehensive, sound, and indicative of the capacity to create and sustain a viable charter school aligned with national industry standards of quality authorizing. Notable strengths included a purposeful and focused charter with all key components well aligned to the school's mission, high academic expectations, sound operational procedures, including a comprehensive startup and staff development plan, a well-articulated and sound fiscal approach, and budget that was coupled with secured donations totaling $100,000 that was verified, a broad network of community support and extensive outreach, and a mission-focused planning committee with the skills and background needed to ensure proper oversight, accountability, and success. As indicated in the staff recommendation report to the board, priority enrolling and admission denial procedures spelled out in the application were consistent. However, that has been since corrected. I do just want to point one inconsistency between the application and the interview and then what was shared with you today, and that had to do with the transportation. The application review team found that both the application and the applicant during the interview did meet expectations on that indicator because, and this is something that people pointed out, they did evidence the willingness, acknowledge that transportation, lack thereof, could pose a barrier to students attending the school and that they would work with families on an individual basis to ensure that lack of transportation was not a barrier to attendance at the school. And that's a little different from what I heard today, and I just wanted to point that out because it's certainly the hope of the staff review team that they will fulfill that, what was spelled out in the charter, that they would, on an individual basis, work with families. They're wanting an outreach to go beyond the metropolitan area of Lexington, going into West Columbia, even to parts of Lexington that are rural, and transportation is going to be a barrier. So definitely to get at the diversity that they hope to bring to the school, they will need to develop that plan. Having said that, we do recommend that the board approve the charter with the amended priority and admission appeal procedures that have since been submitted.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, then I will vote. All in favor of the motion, which is to approve the application of Honor Academy of Lexington, I suppose as amended. Or has that already been done?
It has been corrected.
Okay, it has been corrected. Okay, then please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay, congratulations. Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
With this approval having been made, I just want to reiterate something I've said on numerous occasions. once again, we've provided very rich opportunities for students in certain geographic segments of the state. We still have critical deficits in others. And while this is not an issue for this charter, it is an issue, for, I think, for this district, that somehow we've got to provide, we've got to find ways of providing these rich, I mean, this is a rich opportunity. In the midst of an area where there are many rich opportunities. And we see this in the low state. We see this in many parts of the state. And we know that there are areas of the state that have a dearth of opportunity and do not have, there's no way children can avail themselves of the richness of the educational system. Right. Some of these areas, unless we find a way to address that. And at one time I thought that was through higher ed, through working in partnership with higher ed. It doesn't seem as though that's a viable option. So I don't know what the options are, but I think it's something that we've got to spend some time as a board researching and committing to.
I've thought about that. Actually, I've discussed that a little bit with Wayne and Elliot. I think until our, till we can get, and Mary might agree with what I'm going to say, or maybe not, I don't know, but I think until we can get a funding mechanism that is not based on the legislature having to approve it through a proviso every time, that we're not going, it's going to be difficult to attract some of the proven EMOs who can do that kind of thing, because as you know, it seems to me that the problem is that those areas that most need it are the ones with the fewest resources located in the area to provide it. So it's going to have to be brought in, maybe.
But I believe it goes beyond funding. Mm-hmm. We saw this in the area of agriculture. How do you get agricultural innovation in poor areas of poor states? And that we found solutions to doing that by this. Well, I won't go into that. But we found solutions to that. There are solutions to this. We have a system of higher ed that are basically cowards. They sit and talk about how to prepare educators, the weaknesses in the educational system, and so forth, but they don't want to take the gamble. There are solutions outside of changing funding, because if we wait on the General Assembly to solve the funding issue, then we're saying it's never going to happen. And I don't think we can afford to say it's never going to happen, because we're dooming a significant segment of our student population to mediocrity at best. And I agree, funding would help eliminating the proviso methodology would help. But I think that there are other solutions as well that would require some courage and some conviction on the part of others not around this table to buy into and to agree to step up,
right?
Even experimental.
Well, good. Then we need to explore.
Well, we know somebody on the Commissioner of Higher Ed.
Yeah, we do.
If I could address that, I was in Education Oversight Committee meeting last week, and we had the top companies in South Carolina, and they're gonna fill the void where education hasn't, because they've got, it's called STEM Premier. Are y'all aware of this? Mm-hmm. It's like a LinkedIn for high school students.
Okay.
And they can target them, and they see what courses they're taking. And they can go into these rural areas, kids that never thought about excelling in certain areas, and they know where they are. They go after them. It's an excellent presentation. I'd love for them to
yeah.
build
visit us.
Maybe you could arrange
that. We had Boeing, we had Scana, we had, and this is what they're using.
Interesting. Okay. Well, yeah, obviously we need to explore any avenue we can. I agree. Okay. Yes.
I would just say quickly that long vision is if we can prove the concept and if we can win, it's significantly easier to win in Lexington where we're all from. But if we can prove the concept and we can win 2, 3, 4 years down the road, we will look to plant an honor academy in an underserved community and start the process again. Because, again, this is born out of the love for our state and a love for seeing young men excel. So we'll be back, and we'll go to one of those communities.
Thank you.
We have that on record.
That's right. Well, we don't need to. There's a recorder on it. Right. Okay. Virtus is not here.
Right.
So we don't need to do anything. Oh, yes we do.
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
We, if it's okay, if I...
Yeah.
The Virtus has formally asked to withdraw their application and to come back at a later date, ostensibly to submit a revised charter in October and to come before the board in November. I had a long discussion with Eric last night, and we, as this kind of weird academic year, calendar year, where there is no deadline, we think legally they're in a position to do that. They still would have to have, and they understand, even coming back with a revised charter doesn't guarantee acceptance. So they truly understand that, and it also doesn't guarantee that they'll be able to open, even if approved, in 2016. That would depend on the board's decision. The staff recommendation in working with Eric is to allow them to withdraw, and the board would accept their withdrawal. And that doesn't guarantee they'll be able to come back in October, but that's their plan right now. Be glad to answer any questions.
Would I hear a motion?
I so move that we allow for the withdrawal.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded that we approve the withdrawal of the application for Virtus Academy. Any discussion?
I don't know if this is the appropriate place, but I want to share this. As I studied this application, it was very frustrating. And you study it, and then you look at the rubric that it's got to go up against. And it's just one category after one category not meeting. And then you know that there's going to be a presentation. And there's no way in the world 30 minutes you can correct.
Right.
And then if you correct, when does that become a part of the new application or the charter? So I was very relieved, because that bothers me, that how I can study an application that just doesn't meet the law,
right,
the rubric. I think 30 minutes can rectify, but yet it's not written into the charter. So what do we do? I really have a problem with that. So, I mean, not presenting, of course, took care of
right.
that. But if that had not have happened,
right.
it's just a very bad situation to be put in and try to make some sense out of it.
Yeah, and for the staff as well.
It is.
It is an awkward situation.
The way the law is written, of course, they have a right to a hearing.
All right.
But it is. It's frustrating. And we've had some others that have had, you know, I mean, yeah, so.
But you're just negative through the whole thing.
That's right.
And that's not a good position to be in. Yeah.
Okay. Also, to kind of address Ron, this is a school that would be located in the PD area with a, conceptually a good plan, just not put together real well in relation to the rubric. If we can get charter school applicants to understand that there's a trifecta of the law, the rubric, and the guidelines, and basically that's what we saw with honors, that they were able to tie in pretty well all three of those factors, and so hopefully we can get folks to do it.
That's a great discussion. We got a motion.
Yep.
So
okay.
Let's vote on the motion, because we've gotten our discussion has gotten outside the scope of the motion. So any discussion of the motion? Okay, none. All in favor of the motion, which is to accept the withdrawal of the application, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Nope. I didn't mean to say no. It's unanimous.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Mr. Carmichael says we might be dismissed at this point.
Sure, you can, yeah, you don't have to stay. You're not captive.
We didn't want to rudely walk out.
Well, no, I thought maybe your lawyer, who's also in uniform, was threatening you not to leave.
Yeah, pretty much whatever he says, what we're going
to do. Yeah, I don't blame you.
Thank you all. Thank you so very much.
Yes, sir.